Welcome to the Literacy Works podcast from Bedrock, where we talk to the most interesting people around the country around using Bedrock and all things literacy as well. Today, we are joined by Lucy Turner, who is a history teacher at St Anselm's. And really, St Anselm's kind of came to the fore in my mind as a school to really engage with and speak to about this, because they're a fantastic case study use for Mapper, you know, the disciplinary literacy curriculum that we offer, that's incredible. It happened before I got to Bedrock, the Mapper, and I don't know how it's been achieved. Incredible solution that we offer for schools. And we want to talk to real schools, real teachers about how they use it. So today, as I say, we have Lucy Turner with us, who is a history teacher at St Anselm. So first of all, thank you for giving up your time on what's an incredibly busy Monday morning as we approach Christmas. So thank you so much. We appreciate you coming on. So Lucy, could you just start by telling us a little bit about your role, the kind of pupils you teach, and kind of, yeah, just start off with your role, really. Yeah. That'd be great.
Hi, Andy. I'm a history teacher in a effectively secondary modern, because we are comprehensive, because we are between lots of grammar schools in Canterbury. We have quite a high percentage of special needs children. We have an excellent SEN department and specialist resource provision, so we have a very wide range of students. And we've been using Bedrock for about more than 2 years now, I think. But over the last year we started using Bedrock Mapper for subjects. And as with everything, it's only as successful as the teachers that use it. So Bedrock was incredibly successful, and we were all on board with that, all subject teachers as well. So we were all promoting it, not just the English department. As a result, that gave us a bit of an into, we wanted more. And then Mapper came along, and it's been amazing, because per subject, you know, we can start building in our tier three words. And, you know, we've been working on literacy in tier two and tier three words with the whole school. Like, we've been doing it as departments across the whole school. So we were coming to a bit of an impasse of, like, where do we go next? Because it's all well and good as talking about it and then implementing it into the curriculum, but actually we wanted to find a bit of passion around that. And we could see that, you know, the English department have Bedrock to use for their homework. So we wanted to get in on the action, and it's been amazing. So as we rewrote our curriculum for 2020 and moving on from that, a knowledge rich curriculum, we'd all had, you know, keyword lists, and we use keywords every lesson. So Bedrock Map has been an absolute godsend, because we can set these as homework. So it's pre-learning. And it was a great way.
So you use it to pre-teach, do you?
Yeah, basically. We use it alongside every homework. We basically set it, especially in the history department, we set it alongside every homework that they have as a little task. And it's been brilliant, because it means that students come to the lesson knowing words, you know, knowing, beginning to understand concepts.
It's interesting. I mean, you set it alongside homework. That's really interesting. And so would you, and how did you go about, you talked about kind of, you rewrote your knowledge rich curriculum. And I think a lot of schools, including my own school, when I was a head of department, we did that. And I think we felt really passionate about that. Did Bedrock help you channel some of that passion in some way? Did the Mapper help you do that? And if so, kind of how?
Yeah, because obviously we had our keywords. In history, as I imagine with English, we had thousands. We all know that is just too much, you know, you don't want cognitive overload. So the idea of then having Mapper and being able to filter out what wasn't really needed, it made us relook. It was really good, because as we're, you know, you never stop planning your curriculum, you're constantly tweaking. So it made us relook and filter out those concepts that we could see were coming up in other subjects as well, or not filter them out, but either, you know, knowing that they're in the background and which ones specifically we needed. And, you know, we sat down as a team, we sifted through all the words, and then to think, well, how many do we want to set? And that's a real challenge, actually, because, you know, you can set as many as you like, and then Bedrock has its recommendation, and then we talked and we did research. And we set it up on a sort of aggregate basis. So it built up over time. So we started off with our, you know, term one words, term two, term three. And we'd seen in a few subjects where they just blocked them for the term.
Yeah.
So you'd pick 5 to 10 keywords, you'd put them on, kids would go and practice those, and then left them. So once that term finished, those words finished. Well, we decided to be a little bit renegade and we kept ours going. So once we opened a block of keywords, we keep them rolling.
Interesting. Because it filters them through topic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So if you were doing, I mean, forgive my ignorance, but you're doing like the Norman conquest, then you're doing like the Third Reich. When you open up kind of other topics, the pupils can go back in and recap those at any time, as well as having obviously the reteach queue as well, where pupils haven't mastered words, the words will be introduced to them as well. So you've got that the sort of double whammy going on there, haven't you?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And that's, it was amazing. So I've got a bit of an anecdote, which I really love.
Brilliant.
That when we were teaching or pre-teaching, so in the homework pre-teaching year 8 last year, we were using words around public health in the 19th century. So they were learning about, you know, the Industrial Revolution, as we always do. But they had specific words around cholera and laissez-faire, which we use in our GCSE as well. I mean, we've written our curriculum to spiral up to our GCSE anyway. So we're like, right, okay, let's get these words in here. You know, you could say the word, they just need to know what cholera is, but actually we wanted the whole concept and the understanding around it. So we gave them these words. By the time they'd got to the lesson and we were talking about, you know, the state of the condition of sanitation and water in the 19th century, and I put up the word cholera, the kids are like, I know what that is. And then as well, you know, key figures like Edwin Chadwick, you know, things that you wouldn't normally necessarily think, oh, I'll push my year eights that far. And this wasn't a top set, you know, we'd still stream at Key Stage 3 and it was a mid set. And someone had come in to observe actually from another school in Kent, not related to our school, so from a different partnership. And they watched this lesson where the kids were just throwing at me, you know, key understanding, not just words, but key understanding around
the
topic.
That's the shift, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not just words, it's understanding. That's the shift.
Yeah. As soon as I you know, started to mention things like cesspits and privies and no sewers. And then when we moved into sewers, and they were telling me, you know, they'd started to make that link already. And it was amazing. So one, it reduced the load for me as a teacher because their pre-teaching, their prior knowledge was already there. And it was just up to me to keep that going through that lesson and get them to. And it really encouraged the kids as well because they were like, oh, if I can feel this confident in a lesson because I've used Mapper, and they keep using it, which is just amazing. And the power of words, those kids, the confidence. And I can vividly remember, you know, 3 or 4 students who, you know, are on the SEM register or not even diagnosed with certain things, they're going through the process now, where they can come to lessons feeling very underconfident and it will display itself as certain behaviours.
Yeah.
They were over the moon, and then that gave them the confidence to then write, which they don't normally like doing. And the teacher that observed just couldn't believe it. He said, how have you, these are year 8, they're not even year 10 or 11. I said, I know, but we, you know, we've got to love this. We work with now this golden star and we pushed it forward. Yeah. So from then, you know, the kids were really into using the words because they felt the power that it gave them and that confidence of coming to a lesson and knowing what a word meant.
It's interesting, you know, because as an English teacher, it's funny, you touched on 19th century there. I have taught A Christmas Carol.
Mm.
And I've come on my own journey with this. I've written about this actually on for the Bedrock website. And I taught the pupils Misanthropic. And partly, I'll own this, I'll be honest about this. I did it because it was in vogue to teach vocabulary. It was in vogue. It was like, well, I'll do it because I was very much Twitter trend, the latest, but I'll do that because everyone else, all the cool teachers are doing it. But then what I found, I stumbled across something. Actually, it's not just about saying misanthropic because that's a posh word. It's about the knowledge that underpins it, because misanthropic means anti-human. It goes beyond just being a bit miserable. He's anti-human because it's an allegorical tale about humanity and cynicism. And in the same way that latches onto that deep knowledge, and it's helped you there to latch onto that deep knowledge for your pupils about their learning. And also, by the way, almost that happy accident of connecting the learning as well, like knowing what cholera is, bringing that in. That's so powerful, isn't it, for them?
Yeah. And I think, and to understand laissez-faire as well, which blew me away. You know, I know adults that don't know what that means.
No, exactly.
And it's been wonderful because the kids that started that a couple of years ago, we must have been doing Bedrock a couple of years ago, because last year at least, because we've got now year 10s who, if I say laissez-faire, they know what it means. You know, we go through it again and discuss it, but it's just wonderful. So we've pushed now, as a result of that, to get the funding from school to push it into GCSE. Because for us to be able to then build those words again, same words, but in a different context for some of them, is just invaluable, especially for effectively reading subjects like ours.
Absolutely. And so I'm going to ask you a question that might be a bit of an awkward one, actually, but I think it's an important one to ask. There's, you'll know, there's other ed tech platforms out there, you know, that will, where you can watch videos, you can set quizzes, and the pupils can do those. And you can check what other pupils have done that, and it's self-marking and all that type of thing. There's numerous. I mean, it wouldn't take much to go and look them up if even people didn't know. What for you is the attraction to Mapper when there isn't videos particularly to watch on it? There isn't, you know, there isn't kind of loads of that kind of talking through how to answer a specific question. What's the attraction as a classroom teacher to Mapper for you?
Because it's not a quiz. It's not knowledge based. And I think the hardest thing is that, you know, with a knowledge rich curriculum, is that's actually a bit misleading, the term, because it should be understanding rich. And what Bedrock Mapper does is it ensures that the understanding's there. And the reteaching as well, you know, the algorithm where if they've not understood it comes back. I really love as well. I mean, the kids think it's a glitch at times. It's hilarious, but it also brings in other subjects, any other Mapper words that they haven't learned well enough. And I love that, because we're obviously moving now towards epistemic learning, cross-curricular. We're going to work in, as a school, we're working towards, building in links across subjects to get, you know, it's really difficult to get kids to conceptualize across subjects. You know, there are many words we use in history that are used in maths and science, and the kids do not, you know, interconnect, or they certainly don't bring them across from subjects. If I say the word hypothesis, they don't know what I'm talking about. As soon as I talk about maths and science, they get, start to get an understanding. And that's what Mapper does. Without even, you know, I don't have to do anything. And that's the best thing ever. I don't have to do anything except set the words for my curriculum. So simple.
And on that, one thing I often speak to schools about is the power of Mapper isn't just about what gets served to the pupils, but what gets served to the teachers in terms of the red and the green, the, you know, the subject insights, understanding where the gaps are. But I think the other sort of unsung bit about Mapper is the conversations that, I mean, you've said before about you went through those conversations about selecting words. How did those conversations go when it came to selecting words? What did you do? How did you go about that as a department?
Well, it's not easy in the sense of there are thousands of words, and then sometimes there aren't words, and that's equally a challenge. And can be frustrating when there's a particular word you might use, but then looking at it, we don't want too many. We want to be able to be on the same page as well, which really was great for us as a team, because it meant that we were all looking at which words are being focused on, and we're all on the same page together, rather than off in our silos and just, you know, teaching keywords at the start of a lesson. It was interesting because, you know, where certain words are available, you start to rethink, well, how is that fitting into the curriculum? And is that actually that important? Is that concept as important as another one? So when we went through some of the words, especially, you know, things around World War One, World War Two, and it's, you know, which events as well, because it doesn't just have words and concepts, it's got events. So it's that balancing up between knowledge. So for us, it's AO1 and AO2. How much knowledge, how much explanation, what words are needed for the AO2, the explanation. So again, they're the concepts and the theories, as opposed to balancing up with knowledge words, in terms of events and people and places. It's just been really interesting. It's enabled loads of conversations about our teaching.
Yeah, I've had two really interesting conversations recently with colleagues about this type of thing. The first one was when I embarrassed myself with a colleague, Kate Stockings, when we recorded a podcast, and I gave this really loose, half-baked explanation of GDP. She was like, no, actually, it means blah, blah, blah. But my half-baked explanation of GDP gets me by over the dinner table. It's fine. Like, if it gets mentioned on the news, I can understand sort of what's going on. And the other one is assassination. So your colleague Melissa mentioned the other day about assassination. Archduke Ferdinand was not murdered. He was assassinated, you know, and he wasn't killed because he wasn't hit by a bus. He wasn't murdered because it wasn't kind of random. He was assassinated. So assassination and GDP, you think, well, yeah, that's a key word in a subject. It's more than that, though.
Yeah.
It's unlocking understanding about, because if he's assassinated rather than being hit by a bus, it's so much more. And you can understand the significance of that and unlocking the deeper knowledge. And that, as you, I loved what you said before about, it's about, I was wondering where you were going to go with it, where you said it's not about knowledge. I saw what's going to be said here. But actually then you said understanding rich. And I think it's right because it's a concept. It's not a keyword. I've never liked the term keywords as such, because I think, well, key, what does that even mean? Well, actually, understanding and underpinning that knowledge is so important, isn't it?
And that's really interesting you say that, actually, because I had a spate last year when we were really embedding the use of mapper words, and the kids were like, well, keywords. I said, do you really know what keywords means? Why are we focusing on these keywords? Why am I getting you to go home every week and look at least 5 to 10 keywords? What does the word key mean? And I put it on the board and we discussed it. And I did it with every class that I have, including my year 13, because key means to unlock. And it is that unlocking the understanding. And so these are why we're picking these ones, because it unlocks further understanding or deeper understanding of all the other things. I said, and you know, you know, as a teacher, the minute you start teaching keywords, you could, for say you'd had 5 words, you could practically teach a lesson without opening a textbook, without anything. As soon as you unlock those 5 words using students' prior knowledge and their wider world knowledge, they can pretty much guess what the lesson's all about and what they're learning, which I absolutely love. But we just use the term throwaway keywords. But actually, you know, to metacognitively discuss with the children, what do we mean by keywords? And it's unlocking. And I love that. Yeah. I love the idea that we've got a program that supports them in unlocking that knowledge, because it links it to their, you know, you're asking earlier on about what's so good about Bedrock. And it is the fact that Bedrock uses real world examples with the students as well. So it's not just, you know, they learn a fact about history, not at all. It actually connects to what they understand about the world. And, you know, even, you know, Bedrock itself and then Bedrock Mapper, it's connecting to their world. And I love that, because it's just about unlocking.
Yeah, and I think it's so interesting to kind of hover on the idea about what words mean, because analysis means to loosen or to untie, and evaluate means weigh up and assess, and that's all. And I think it's really important. I mean, I completely agree. I remember listening to a lecturer talk about Macbeth, and he spoke about the importance of equivocation as the theme of Macbeth, the idea that everything is about being is misleading of it, and so unlocking means something very different in English when you're in literature, when you're basically exploring the spiritual element about what it means to be human. Whereas in history, I mean, Shanahan talks about this in terms of the disciplinary literacy that, that I've written about before as well. You know, history exists for a different reason than English does. English is about kind of, literature is about exploring the soul, whereas history is about sequencing and understanding and kind of interpreting the significance of the past so that we can understand our present and future, right? Am I misspoken there?
No, would you agree with that? Yeah, that's right.
And I just think there's something here about, no, Mappa hasn't got videos, and no, it hasn't got kind of all of that stuff that you might see elsewhere. But that's almost, if you expect that, then you're almost missing the point, aren't you? Because it's about, no, we're going to have the integrity to sit together, to look at the important knowledge that we're going to unlock for our pupils. We're not just going to wang them off on a quiz somewhere and say, go and do that, off you go. We're going to say, no, these are the 10 most important things. Because even in Mappa, for A Christmas Carol alone, there's 60 words. Mm-hmm. You wang them in front of the kids and off you go. Actually, no, it's not enough. You need to pick the 5 or 10. I mean, and that's what I was going to ask you. In terms of your day-to-day with Mappa, what does it look like for you? They do it in the class, they do it for homework.
Yeah.
But do you use it in lessons at all? There's no wrong or right answer here, but...
We don't. So we set it as homework. We sit together as a department. We use the program there. And that's kind of the last point that we look at it in terms of, we then get the feedback from the students. We demonstrate with the kids at the start of the year how to use it, et cetera. But we actually let the children go and do the work because we're working on independent learning. And then they bring it to us. So they discuss with us. Obviously, we hold them accountable if they haven't done it, because we get the lovely email. Weekly emails per class that tell us who has and who hasn't and what they've learned and what they haven't, which is really good. That's where we pull it back into lessons. We take those emails, and if there's a class where, I mean, I don't highlight individual students either, and I certainly don't put that email up with names in front of them, but I can pull out then which words are they struggling with, which words haven't they touched at all, and we can build that into the learning. And that's how we use it. We use it. So actually, it's really, it's non-intrusive for us as teachers. We utilize it in the sense of, we set it up and let it run, which means it's, in terms of workload, it's zero for us as teachers. But it gives us insight and it gives us understanding of where the children are at, which is great. It's what you want. So it's low input, high output for us.
Yeah, and I think that's so important, because the word I keep coming back to is integrity. The idea that you've spent the time, you've front-loaded it by picking those 10 words. And when I say front-loaded, you spent maybe half an hour to an hour discussing it. But then actually, you've also got, there's a pedagogical element here around teachers as well, in terms of, you've got probably, I don't know your context, but you may have less experienced teachers in your team who actually, I'm teaching the same.
Yeah.
Content, the same keywords as Miss Turn down the corridor, and actually she's experienced and she knows what she's doing, and I'm teaching the same words as Miss Turner. So I you know, that's a certain amount of confidence building there, isn't there? Because I remember when I was just starting out, you were in silos. It was like, okay, every man and woman for themselves, off your pop, whereas this is really about sharing that knowledge, isn't it?
And it makes you come together.
Disseminating it.
Definitely makes you come together. And it's really nice to work as a team on it.
I think so.
It's just lovely talking about words, which I know that sounds ridiculous. But, and I've talked to, colleagues in maths and in science, PE. Do you know what? We love our subjects. And so to actually sit down for half an hour and just talk about what we teach, the subject, it gets you back to talking about your subject, and it leads on to many other conversations.
It is lovely. I agree. And in the age where some schools, I'm not saying all schools, but some schools have fallen foul to a top-down curriculum that's kind of, you must deliver this, and there are merits to that. I respect and understand that, but actually really giving teachers the space to love, understand, and kind of really conceptualize their own curriculum I think that's really, really important, incredibly important. And so just before we finish, you did touch on a few other subjects there. What else is going on across the school with Mappa? What's your understanding of that as a teacher?
I mean, obviously, because we don't meet as all the departments together. I mean, we do have literacy sessions together, and we might talk about it. And we talk to each other about it. I don't particularly know what's going on in other subjects. I think it's much like ours, but the kids tell us. And they're clearly setting mapper words, because the kids will come to me on those glitches, as they call them, and go, oh, they gave me a DT word. Oh, I got maths one. I was like, yes, that's right. You know, you need to practice before you move on. Which is also nice because it brings us together in the power of literacy as subjects. And we did, when we set out together as a school on this journey, when we embarked on it, we were all together. We didn't just, you know, it wasn't just department by department. We all sat together. We all discussed. And so, yeah, now we're that two solid years in, we're coming into our third year. I think, well, where we're going as a school, I know, is that we will go into this cross-curriculum, not planning, but working together to see where our connections are across our curricula. And we will use, I think we'll be reusing and relooking at Bedrock then to build the power into that. There was something else earlier on, sorry, Andy, about, you know, what the beauty of Bedrock is for us, you know, away from the bells and whistles of videos. And I just need to say, it is exactly that. There is no distraction. It allows children to concentrate. Because my son uses it and I watch him. And, you know, they have to sit. They have to sit and read. There is a reader if they can't, you know, and if they struggle. But they have to sit and look and concentrate. And there are images, but very few. I think it's like one per concept. So there's no cognitive overload. So there's a reduction in distraction. And it's not just a fun plaything. It's easy to use, but it's valuable. And as an educator, I love that. It's not just, like we say, a little quiz here and a little video there and move on. It is something that they do have to study, but also they're limited on the time that they use it. So that's fantastic, because they actually get frustrated in the end because they want to do more.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And it's interesting because anyone who's listening to this who knows me will laugh when they say that I love EdTech and that I'm always onto the next EdTech platform and I love it. And they know that this is me, this is not my thing, it's the next thing. But one thing I've always seen with Bedrock is that from all the platforms I've ever used, seen, launched, it's had the least amount of resistance from pupils. I think the pupils, when they see it, when it's been launched effectively and when they've had that rationale communicated to them, it's the one where they see their potential being unlocked the most, the most and the quickest. So I agree with you completely. I mean, I said this time and time again this year, you wouldn't have got me out of the classroom for anything else other than coming to work for Bedrock. Because I miss the classroom every day. I do. And I miss my school. But I know that what we're doing at Bedrock is so important, and I value that. And it's been lovely, lovely, lovely to hear you speaking about it today. Just every time you've pretty much spoken today, you should see my notepad. I've got timestamp, go back to that. Timestamp, go back to that. There's so much good stuff. There's just so much brilliant stuff. And it's been lovely just to listen, you know, just to someone really living and breathing this. So thank you so much for your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Sorry, I took notes because I was like, oh, we do need to sort of like go back to that. We do need to revisit that. So.
Yeah. But that's what it's all about. And I think everyone in every walk of life, in any walk of life, if they're not reflecting and not making notes and they're not looking at themselves, then the journey's come to an end, and journeys should never come to an end in that sense. So, you know, it's been a thrill and a pleasure talking to you, and thank you for everything you're doing. I sincerely mean that. Thank you so much. It's been wonderful. So we'll be in touch, and thank you, and keep doing the good work. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Take care. Bye.
Bye.